Davis and Optor here with Matt Fort and Felix Tomsud. We have a new leader in the Bundesliga after Bayern Munich absolutely dominated Wolfsburg, and despite the fact that Borussia Dortmund won over Stuttgart. We also are going to touch on Domenico Tedesco, who seems to be on his last legs at Schalke. And we're also going to talk about the unbeaten teams in 2019 in the Bundesliga so far. But since we have a new Bundesliga leader, let's start this week in Munich. It seems like the best motivating factor this season for Bayern Munich was Joachim Löw deciding to drop Jerome Boateng, Thomas Müller, and Mats Hummels, because after that decision was made earlier in the week, they absolutely dominated Wolfsburg with a 6-0 victory in Allianz Arena. And because of that, they're now top of the table. So that's the best that's the best kind of motivation there is, I guess.
Yeah, if only it was that simple. Just rely on the national team coach to sack three players and assume that they'll just perform for their club in domestic business. It fits a very, very tidy black and white narrative, I think. I think that works quite well. I don't think it's totally untrue either. Some of the comments that came out of the Bayern dressing room after that win over Wolfsburg were quite strong, a lot of players coming out in defence of Thomas Müller, Mats Hummels and Jerome Boateng. I think Joshua Kimmich in particular was quite outspoken regarding in his criticism of the German Football Association for the way they've gone about it. And Thomas Müller's performance was particularly impressive. But then again, his performance was impressive last week against Borussia Mönchengladbach as well. So I think it's certainly far too simple to be saying that it's purely a motivational, psychological thing that the Bayern are going to take a boost from this, although, like I said, not totally untrue. But this ominous form that Bayern Munich have managed to get themselves into over the past few months, turning round this deficit, was it 9 points and 16 goal deficit they had at one point behind Borussia Dortmund, to have turned that round as quickly as they have done is extremely, extremely ominous. And Niko Kovac deserves a huge amount of credit for that. The players themselves deserve great credit. I think we can touch on Lewandowski later. I think he's also been particularly impressive on and off the pitch.
He leads the Bundesliga and the Champions League in goals, so that's worth something for sure. Let's talk about that decision from Löw a little bit, though, because it does seem to make sense. But a lot of the issues that Bayern Munich players seem to have, I believe, was not really necessarily a decision, although part of the decision is leaving out three players in their either late 20s or early 30s. It rubbed people some wrong way, but it was more the manner of the way that Joachim Löw handled the situation. Felix, what do you think of this decision and how it was handled?
I personally think that, as many people argued, Joachim Löw had to make a change of some sort after that horrible performance over the summer of the World Cup. I do think that you could tell that from many players acknowledged that change needed to come in some way. They had problems, first of all, with the manner in which it was done, which in some ways I can understand, because you're talking about three World Cup winners, three well-acknowledged players, three world-class players, arguably. And leaving those three out is a big step when it comes to Löw. Let's be clear about that. It's one of those things that can either turn out as a great move, like making place for young players. And we know the young players are there in Germany's setup. I mean, attacking players like Havertz and you,
well,
have,
even someone like Gnabry or
yeah,
someone
exactly like
or someone like Julian Brandt, who even though he has this has a pretty solid place in the side, he hasn't really been starting much for Germany since at least last year.
Yeah, absolutely. I also think that from Bayern's perspective, it fits a certain narrative, because Bayern as a club and their fans, they won loads of titles, but they have this narrative behind them that maybe me and Matt can relate to as Man United fans, that everyone hates us, but we're still at it, and we're still winning titles, doing our thing. And it fits like this us against the world narrative that Bayern fans like so much. And in that sense, I do think it helps, even if a tiny bit, but it does help Bayern's cause. When it comes to Germany's national team, I think the talents are there. No one has doubts about that. But looking to the future, you can also think about like what's going to happen with departures of other players. How Yogi Löw will handle that. That was something that might stay in Germany's players' heads when it comes to the future. And you could tell by the manner that, for an instance, Kimmich spoke about it afterwards. So it's going to be interesting to see what Yogi Löw is going to make of that process. Generally speaking, as I said, drastic change needed to come. The timing, I mean, we can talk about that. It's Bayern have called it questionable. But we can talk about the timing. But generally speaking, I think change needed to come, and that's what it does. So I generally don't see the complaints when it comes to the process itself. But when it comes to the manner in which it was done, like just a rather cold meeting, and that's something that I think Bayern players are in a way right to question.
It's so funny. This season, it seems like Bayern Munich have mastered trolling. I mean, when you have that press conference earlier in the season where they were basically trolling the media, you had Hasan Salihamidžić trolling Didi Hamann for criticism from Robert Lewandowski, and including giving Robert Lewandowski the captaincy afterwards. Yeah. And then you see this reaction to Joachim Löw's decision to leave those three out, and all three players. I mean, Thomas Müller obviously got on the score sheet, but also Mats Hummels and Jerome Boateng were also terrific in this game.
I think it's a lot more complicated than that, and I wouldn't. I would hesitate to draw Bayern's reactions to these three omissions from the national team. I'd hesitate to draw parallels with Salihamidžić and Hamann's little dispute, and with Bayern's press conference. Those two latter instances were absolutely nothing to be proud of. If you're Bayern Munich, if you're a Bayern Munich fan,
You should be. I didn't say you should be proud of it, but
I wouldn't
call
it trolling either. I think that it's pretty disgusting the way both of those incidents were carried out from Bayern Munich's point of view, and it's certainly not befitting of a club of their stature. In terms of this actual current issue, I think just to go back to the national team. I agree, Felix, that the change had to come at some point. Not surprised at it. The problem is that it's come far too late, and it's come once again. It looks like the DFB and Joachim Löw have gone about making these changes. It's a bit like a chess player wearing boxing gloves, completely ham-handed, completely without any sort of feeling or finesse. And I'm reminded of the way they went about the Mesut Özil and Ilkay Gundogan affair, the way that Leroy Sané was just left out of the World Cup squad without much of an explanation. This all fits as unfortunately quite a similar pattern, doesn't it, with the German national team. I think the next international break is coming up, so Joachim Löw is going to have to nominate his squad in the coming week, I think it is. Why did he left this bombshells so late? This new revolution, this transition, was supposed to happen immediately following the disastrous World Cup. That's when the decision was made to retain him, and that's when they promised changes. Why has it taken so long for these massive changes, as necessarily as they might have been, why has it taken so long for it to happen? I just don't think they've helped themselves at all.
I would also question, I mean, as you said, I totally agree that the timing was key here, and the timing for Löw's decision, for the announcement, it was not ideal in any way. The effect it will possibly have on the national team is, well, there's an international break coming, but it doesn't give the fans the feeling that a real change is coming. I think mostly in the sense that most after that summer, both on and off the pitch, and the way the DFB personnel, I would say, from President Grindel to Oliver Bierhoff, the general manager, as they call him here, or team manager, to Yogi Löw and his staff. The talent in Germany's squad was never in question. I mean, before the World Cup, I mean, we could see, we remember that friendly against Saudi Arabia that they won, but they weren't great at all. And we all say, nah, they're gonna raise up their game when it comes to the money time. That did not happen. And instead of, I mean, once we realized that the talent was there, that the players of world-class stature were there, the questioning process has to be made also when it comes to the decision-making process of some of those above the players. And they promised that in that press conference, I think it was, 2 weeks after the World Cup, after they were out of the World Cup, they promised essential and personal changes. That was a quote. Those personal changes were barely done. I think one or two members of the coaching staff were replaced, but it's minor. It has no actual evidence that this change is actually taking place.
Until suddenly he goes and sacks three of his long-term World Cup winners, which you can debate the footballing merits and whys and wherefores in terms of. I don't think they're all completely the same situation. I think you can certainly make an argument to phase out or drop totally Mats Hummels and Jerome Boateng. I think both of them are past their peak, mm-hmm. and I think with lads of Nicolas Sula coming
through. It's interesting you say that. I think a lot more Germany fans would say that more about Thomas Müller than those two.
I think you only have to look at Thomas Müller's performances in the past couple of weeks, especially against Gladbach and this weekend against Wolfsburg, to show how much he's coming back into the...
But is he fit into that Germany team anymore?
That's a debate we can have later. Well, yeah, we've got Julian Brandt coming in. You want to see him having more games. You want to see Kai Havertz having more games. I think it's fair. You can debate the footballing merits of it. But I personally would I would have retained Thomas Müller at the very least, not necessarily as a starter, but for the impact he can have off the bench. That is a player who's unique in European football. He can change games. The way modern football is developing, I do think that Jerome Boateng and Mats Hummels lack pace. And we saw the extent to which Germany were caught out on the counter-attack at the World Cup, and the ways which Bayern Munich in the first half of the season has been caught out several times when they've not got a pacey defender in there. So I think there's more of an argument to have dropped them. But yeah, I would have kept Thomas Müller certainly around the squad. I think chopping him like that is questionable, even from a footballing point of view.
Yeah, but I mean, at the end of the day, it all goes down to the same people making the decisions. I mean, people spoke about how this whole Die Mannschaft thing, how the branding efforts were behind the Germany's campaign at the World Cup and the effects it had. At the end of the day, you have the same people making decisions. Why would Germany fans trust the same people that brought them that World Cup? Why would Germany fans look at the decision made by Löw and his staff and say, something there has changed? It doesn't look like it at all. That decision was handled in a poorly manner. I think we can all agree on that. We are talking about three, World Cup winners. There is no other way of putting it. And at the end of the day, it remains to be seen if this is going to end up being justified. But the question marks that were around the DFB after the World Cup still remain. As far as I'm concerned, nothing has changed.
But it's no question that this decision has really lit a fire under those three players, and not just them, but I mean, you saw the reaction from the entire Bayern Munich team on Saturday. They were all feeding off each other's energy, and it was really impressive to watch. You also saw Serge Gnabry, who had a goal and assist in the first half. Frank Ribery, who a lot of people have written off, he had three assists in less than 10 minutes in the second half. I mean, this Bayern team looks really dangerous again. So now that they're the top of the table, do we expect them to run away with this?
I don't think they'll run away with it, no, because I think, and we'll discuss it in a sec, I think we've seen enough progress in Borussia Dortmund in the past week to suggest that there is still a slight shimmer of hope there for fans of exciting Bundesliga title races, of which there probably aren't many after the past 6 years. We don't really know what that looks like or feels like. I think, as I said before, the credit has to go to Bayern Munich more so than this external accident with the DFB. I think you're right to point out Serge Gnabry, the way that him and Joshua Kimmich have been linking up down that right hand side has been really, really impressive. The way that that Thomas Müller and Robert Lewandowski have almost revolutionized their understanding of each other.
Sorry, to go on to Serge Gnabry, you said also down the right hand side. What I think is impressive about Gnabry this season is that he has chemistry with on both flanks, mm-hmm. which is something that you didn't really necessarily see from wingers that Bayern Munich acquired to try to replace Arjen Robben and Frank Ribery.
For me, I mean, the progress he's made is a shining example of the way that Bayern Munich's more general transition has to be conducted. They've tried similar with Kingsley Coman. which for various reasons, mainly his injury, his unfortunate injury layoffs, hasn't really quite borne fruit in the same way. Gnabry's pace, his penetration, his ability from dead balls, he has goals in him. An incredibly exciting prospect to watch, and impressive also that he's not necessarily a traditional Niko Kovac player. I think that's relatively fair to say. So makes it all the more impressive the way that he's come on. He'll be vital against Liverpool this week, and against Dortmund in a couple of weeks' time. But I think a lot of the credit really does have to go down to Bayern Munich. There's reports in the press over here over the past couple of weeks about the way they went about that training camp in Doha over winter, where I think by that point the gap was cut to 6 points, I think, if I remember correctly. Well, correct me on that, I might have that one wrong. But even then, the training camp, they were saying, right, this is it, this is the time where we're all going to get together. That's when all these comments came out of the training camp, and we're Bayern Munich, we're going to win this league, we're better than Dortmund. I think we actually laughed at a couple of comments, didn't we? I can't remember exactly who it was. What was it? Was it Kimmich? I can't remember exactly off the top of my head, who came out and said, oh, I think it might have been Hummels, who came out and said, yeah, because Dortmund might be top, but we're a much better team. And everyone sort of laughed.
Wagner.
Was it Sandro Wagner? It might have been Sandro Wagner. And we may have laughed because it was Sandro Wagner. Yeah. it's not down to you, son.
It's a different argument, but there you go.
But yeah, the principle remains the same, that they believed this, they had this belief in them, and that is definitely something that Borussia Dortmund don't necessarily have as a squad in terms of the mentality. But they've been building up to this. I think the way Lewandowski has taken on responsibility has been absolutely key. He has been made officially the third captain behind Manuel Neuer and Thomas Müller. And as a non-German at Bayern Munich, that's quite a step. I don't think that should be underestimated.
Well, also, you also think about what Jupp Heynckes said about Robert Lewandowski at the end of last season, questioning his work rate on the training pitch and stuff. And
there have been question marks over Lewandowski. I think from a personal point of view, you do tend to hear reports coming out of Saarbrücker Straße in Munich that Lewandowski is a bit distant, he is a bit more separate. He feels quite happy in Munich, but he doesn't spend much time with the squad. He's not necessarily on really, really good friendly terms with his teammates and their wives and girlfriends and whatnot. He tends to do his own thing, which is fine. But following that crisis over autumn and winter, and when Bayern Munich called these huge meetings with Hoeneß, with Rummenigge, with Kovac, with the senior players, Lewandowski was one of them. And if the reports be to be believed, Lewandowski was apparently the first player who spoke up. It wasn't Müller or Neuer who had the first word in the meetings, it was Lewandowski. And it's him who's really seems to have put a personal effort into grabbing this team by the neck and leading them, not just with his goals on the pitch, but also, and this is the new development, with his personal and private attitude towards his teammates. He's also been told in no uncertain terms by Hoeneß and Rummenigge that he's going nowhere, that contract until 2021 is staying as a contract till 2021.
There's more talk of him.
There's reports today that he's going to prolong his contract.
Yeah, I was going to say.
There's even suggestions that he could prolong it. So whether the desire to join Real Madrid has decreased somewhat given their issues this season, who knows? But I think it's quite telling that all these several developments have taken place regarding Lewandowski to become a real genuine leader in this title charge.
I think we also need to give the credit to Niko Kovac in part, because the transition he's made as a coach during this season has been rather impressive. I mean, you could actually feel in the beginning of the season when they were having this crisis, when the results weren't going their way. I mean, some of us had the feeling that Niko Kovac knows how to be the underdog's coach, like with Frankfurt the previous year when they won the DFB Pokal. But he really adapted his tactical style of play. You can really see that Bayern are more used to controlling the game, are more comfortable with playing ball possession-based football, which wasn't Niko Kovac's forte previously at Frankfurt. So that transition has really contributed to Bayern's transition and to Bayern getting back to winning ways. And that Wolfsburg game, let's bear in mind, Wolfsburg are one of the best teams in the league in terms of form. I think they're second in 2019, if I'm not mistaken. But they've certainly been very, very good so far.
Yeah.
And they've been they're contenders for Champions League football next season.
Still a little bit away off from Leipzig, but they are in the conversation.
Of course. At the end of the day, Wolfsburg are one of the league's best teams when it comes to form, and Bayern just demolished them. And that just goes to show that comfortable Bayern feeling of dominating games, of bringing that massive attacking talent into account and into play, and bringing that onto the pitch, it feels like it's back, and that's to Niko Kovac's credit, I think, at least in part, if not for the most part.
So as Matt, as you pointed out off air, it's hard to mention Bayern Munich taking the top of the table without mentioning Borussia Dortmund now being in second place after spending most of the season in first place. They still won their game over Stuttgart 3-1, although there was at one point where the victory didn't seem very assured, and it took a late winner from Paco Alcácer and then some insurance from Christian Pulisic in stoppage time in order for them to get to that 3-1 scoreline. Marco Roy said afterwards that to him it doesn't really matter who leads at this point. I think we also said last week it actually doesn't really matter who leads at this point because they're still on tied on points. The goal difference is just flipped. So what do we make of this team now?
Yeah, Marco Reus wasn't the only Dortmund player to come out and say that the actual position in the table is irrelevant at this point. I think Sebastian Kehl said similar. I think Axel Witsel said similar. Although it might not seem it purely from looking at the table and looking at the results this weekend, it's actually not been a bad week for Borussia Dortmund, all considered.
They were eliminated from the Champions League.
They were eliminated from the Champions League, but they were eliminated from the Champions League 3 weeks ago in London when they got smashed 3-0. I was there on Tuesday night when they really should have actually been 3-0 up at half time against Tottenham. I think
it was that 5 minute stretch I think from like 22 to 27 or something like that where it was just baffling how much pressure there was in the penalty area during that time.
They played really, really well. So a huge compliment that first half. All it was missing was the goals, but then again, the tie was over anyway. But even the atmosphere around Dortmund on that evening, you could tell that all perhaps wasn't lost. The support remained solid throughout the entire 90 minutes. There was definitely, it didn't look like a team who'd been knocked out at come the final whistle. The fans all seemed quite happy that they'd seen a combative performance, and there was maybe the feeling that they'd turned a corner after a pretty disappointing couple of months, and this was continued on Saturday against Stuttgart.
Yeah, one thing that's worth noting is that it doesn't seem like the fans are frustrated with what's happening at Borussia Dortmund. Yes, they lost this 9-point lead, as you mentioned, Matt, 6 points at the going into the second half of the season, but it still seems like at least from an outsider's perspective, that there doesn't seem to be that much frustration where they are right now.
No, absolutely not. I mean, to understand that, I think there's one personal story of mine that I recall when I just came. I think I told that on the podcast back in the day, but when I just got to Germany, my flatmate was a massive, massive BVB fan, and that was during the first Tuchel days, and they were playing good football. It all looked good. And I asked her, are you excited by the post-Klopp era? She said, nah, not so much. I said, why? I mean, you're playing good football, you're winning games. He said, because that's not the passion of Klopp. And that just goes to show the state of mind that many Dortmund fans have. They want fight. They want their team to put its heart on the pitch. And this Dortmund team does just that. I mean, even when things don't go their way, you can't blame them for not making an effort. They're a young team. They're a very talented team. But at the end of the day, they're still this lack of experience in comparison to Bayern Munich anyways. And I think this year Dortmund's player are really showing what the fans want to see, and that's why the fans are behind them. Quite as simple as that. It came to that point a couple of weeks ago. I think you were in the Südtribüne, or someone has tweeted that the fans handed out leaflets in the Südtribüne asking for the fans to sort of start getting the atmosphere back to the hell of the Südtribüne, as they called it. So they sort of also looking at themselves and where they can also put the effort. So all in all, I think the atmosphere in and around Dortmund when it comes to their fans is generally positive, as it should be. I don't think it should be negative, despite maybe results not going their way previously. And that's generally the way to go. I think that the atmosphere when it comes to Dortmund's fans and players, it seems like a very healthy situation at the moment. And for the sake of this league, long it may continue.
Yeah, I think there's an acceptance, not just from the fans, but also throughout the club, that the aim this season for Borussia Dortmund was never actually to win the title. Yeah, it was great. They found themselves 9 points clear. And of course, that's what they're now going to be aiming for. How can they not? But in terms of the more general development of Borussia Dortmund and this team under Lucien Favre and the changes in structure higher up the club, it's not the absolute be all and end all and complete disaster if they don't go and win the league this year, although it would be a shame given the situation they're in. But I accept there were a lot of positives to take. They've had trouble breaking down deep line defences this season, but that didn't prove to be a problem ultimately against Stuttgart. It took them a while, but they did break that down. It was good to see a return of Dortmund's positive substitutions. It was a huge factor in the first half of the season, wasn't it? Particularly with Favre bringing on Alcacer so often. This time he brought on Christian Pulisic. It's a great effect. One goal, one assist in the final quarter of an hour. So that was really, really good to see. Taking chances was generally good from Borussia Dortmund's point of view. And three goals from only 8 chances created. That's good in terms of effectiveness. A more positive attitude. They've got a couple of tough games coming up ahead of the game against Bayern. That's going to be the all-decisive fixture, isn't it? I think we can all agree on that. Hertha Berlin away next week. They've not won in Berlin in four seasons, so that needs turning round. Hertha, an even more difficult place to go this season, I'd argue, than most. Wolfsburg at home after that. I'd be looking at that if I was a Dortmund fan, looking at it with a little bit more positivity. As Felix said before, Wolfsburg have been one of the surprises of the season, but they have dropped off in recent weeks. Rumours of disagreements between Jürg Schmacker and Bruno Labbadia.
His contract hasn't been extended.
Exactly. All is certainly not well at Wolfsburg, and they're getting smashed by Bayern Munich the way they did is certainly not going to help. So I'd back Dortmund to win there at home. And if they can go into that Bayern game in touching distance of Bayern, then who knows? We might have a title race after all.
All right, another club where there seemed to be more positive signs this week was at Schalke. They still lost to Werder Bremen 4-2, but Breel Embolo came back. He scored twice. In the first half, they looked very active, but they still lost Daniel Caligiuri, who is arguably their best player. We're bringing them up again because it does seem that, like, Domenico Tedesco does now still has the backing from the front office. But this could all change by the time you listen to this, because if they lose to Manchester City big in the Champions League, Domenico Tedesco might not be the Schalke's coach anymore. But Matt, you still think that they need to at least see out the season, right? With Domenico Tedesco.
I think you've put that extremely politely, saying that there's been a few shoots of positivity for Schalke this weekend. I agree that Breel Embolo's performance was good. I think it was his first start.
I say that because there was somewhat of a reaction from Schalke. And you saw Salif Sané was not starting in this game, which was a change that Domenico Tedesco has made way too late. They really dominated Bremen at the beginning of that game before arguably a questionable penalty call in the second half kind of derailed things a little bit.
It was a very questionable penalty call, but even so, I think 20 minutes dominance and one good finish from Breel Embolo is... For me, I'm sorry, not enough to say that this is looking up or positive.
Well, it's showing positivity, not necessarily looking up.
If any Schalke fans
they're looking up at everybody else, yeah, but they're
fair enough. You know, stay positive.
The other opinions to come after Matt's answer. Just FYI.
It's a complicated one, isn't it? I think we were speaking to a colleague of ours, Matt Marshall, earlier. He's absolutely convinced that Tedesco has to go. I think he's completely lost patience with him. And it's easy to see why. This is Schalke's worst season in 36 years. They've gone from second to fifth bottom. Fourth bottom? Fifth bottom? I think I'm right in saying. Can't remember exactly. So, yeah, I mean, there's certainly an argument to say that. At the start of the season, he said that he wants to introduce a little bit more of a playing philosophy, a footballing philosophy into this team. So move on from the quite stubborn, quite dull defensive Schalke that we saw last season and move on and start dealing with them as a footballing unit. He's completely failed in that. Whether that's down to Tedesco's own failings or down to the tools put at his disposal by Christian Heidel, we've discussed that quite a few times. I've also said before that I think, given that Schalke made the decision that the problems were up above and not on the pitch with Domenico Tedesco as coach, I think that seems to be the way they're going to go. They've brought in a new sporting director in Jochen Schneider, who's also he wants to bring in a technical director as well.
Yeah, but it seems like Jochen Schneider is still. It still seems like he's not going to move on from Domenico Tedesco, at least at the moment.
No, they're not. No, they won't. And they've said that the game against Man City this week is irrelevant. They're not judging themselves on that. They don't expect them to go through. I don't think any of us expect them to go through. But then again, we expect them to get hammered in the first leg, and they actually put in their best performance of the season. But even that won't be enough. The gulf in class is far too big. Tedesco was still very much accepted by the fans, as far as I can tell. Yes, he took a lot of abuse, but after the defeat to Dusseldorf a couple of weeks ago, but he actually took it quite. I think he took it quite well. I think the way he went about that, physically and literally facing up to Schalke's ultras and holding his hands up and saying, "Yeah, I'll take responsibility." I think there's an acceptance in Schalke that he does get it. I think that is quite highly valued. So I don't think that's. A huge problem. He still has support in the team, if reports are to be believed, and key players in Daniel Caligiuri, Burgstaller, even Ralf Fährmann, who was demoted, are still behind him, but by all accounts. And there were signs, like you said, against Bremen, that there is some fight in that team. They don't want to completely lay down their arms and hold their hands up. I can think of one particular moment when Bremen had a couple of shots on goal, a big goal mouth scramble, and I think with Stambouli getting back on the line and hammering it clear, and a good save from the goalkeeper as well. There's no lack of fight in that team. It's just a complete lack of quality. And I think it does seem to be...
And as you said, that's not necessarily Tedesco's fault.
Not necessarily. Partly, yes, because you know, he also had a hand in putting that squad together, but it was Christian Heidel's squad, and Schalke made the decision that that's the issue. So therefore, I would suggest that having made that decision, give Tedesco one more year and see where that goes. But for the time being, it has to be a return to what Schalke are good at. They've been shipping goals in recent weeks. Three against City, three against Mainz, four against Dusseldorf, four against Bremen. That's nowhere near good enough. They've got a tough game. I think they've got, is it away or not, at home to Red Bull, I think, next week. That's not going to be an easy one. They'll probably end up staying up, purely by default, because of the teams below them being significantly worse.
Yeah. I mean, are we still even thinking of relegation at this point, Felix? You think?
I don't think so. I think it's a classic case of a team not bad enough to go down. And I mean, at the end of the day, Schalke has quality in its squad, even if it's not the quality that you would expect from a side like Schalke. Yes, I do believe that Schalke's squad planning has been, well, to call it lacking is an understatement this season, but I think the Schalke's hierarchy seems to put it down to Heidel rather than to Tedesco. And also, if you look at those signings, they feel like a Christian Heidel signings. I mean,
we said that last week for sure. I mean, exactly. The quality of players that they were bringing in, Sebastian Rudy and Salif Sané, was not of a Champions League caliber team.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was our colleague John that said a couple of weeks ago that Christian Heidel made Mainz-esque signings at Schalke.
Right.
And that just didn't work. It just failed miserably. But having said that, you get the feeling that the Schalke hierarchy does believe in Tedesco's ability. That City game is absolutely irrelevant. I mean, even if they get thrashed 6-0 or something.
I mean, we hope that they anything. don't they don't sack him after that game, correct?
Yeah, I don't think they will,
but further bad results in the Bundesliga will be a problem.
That's what he would have to take.
Exactly. What the new sporting director Jochen Schneider laid down the gauntlet before the Werder Bremen game and said that we expect results, we expect an improvement absolutely immediately. After the 4-2 defeat, he said, yeah, we're just about happy because we did see a change. We did see an improvement. However, we would have expected a better result. So Domenico Tedesco is still very, very much on a knife edge there. He's nowhere near safe. I think that change could yet still come. However, I do get the impression that they will just about end up sticking with him. I also believe personally that it would be the right decision. If you sack him, who are they going to bring in? The name Roger Schmidt has been bandied around.
Yeah, we talked about some of the names last week. Hoop Stevens, Roger Schmidt.
Exactly. And none of the... For me, all those names being mentioned are the managerial equivalents of bringing in the likes of Mascherell and Mark Hoot and Stuart Seder, who they brought in, on the pitch. That would also not be matching Schalke's ambition. So stick with Tedesco, give him the tools required and see where they go from there. One big blow going forward is the Calajoy being out. I mean, not just for the City game, as we said, I don't think that's particularly important, but in terms of looking ahead to Red Bull next week and the games they have to come, Calajoy being missing for 4 to 6 weeks.
He's their most... It's crazy that he is their most creative player.
Best player by far.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and he does so much defensively for them too. He covers so much ground for that team, and it's going to be really hard to imagine what they're going to do without him.
Obviously, positive to mitigate that is obviously Breland Bolo coming back. You pointed out earlier that his performance against Bremen was really good. Two really, really well-taken goals, especially the first one. Great touch take onto his left foot and then dink it past the goalkeeper. Really, really impressive. So fingers crossed for him that he stays injury-free and that Schalke will have a little bit more goal-scoring threat going forward.
Also, when we talk about Tedesco, I mean... the results are not going their way at the moment, but there's an aspect to Tedesco's management style that I think plays exactly to the qualities of Schalke as a club, which is the idea of bringing in young players and giving them a chance. We've seen Ahmed Kutucu recently getting a chance up top and bringing in and scoring some goals. I think he has 3 goals in the last 5 or 6 appearances. Alexander Nübel is another example.
Weston McKennie doing really well, and by all accounts has a good relationship.
Getting a shot up top. And that plays straight into Schalke's strength when it comes to their long plan, squad planning. So if we look at their signings and we say that they are not of the quality that we expect from Schalke, we also need to have a look at that. And I think their fans do see that. And that's why... I personally, we've seen Schalke's ultras shouting that they've had enough, that they expect change, but I haven't seen any particular call to sack Tedesco from the side of their fans. I think it also has something to do with him facing them and taking responsibility, which is fantastic. I mean, you look at other quote-unquote older and more experienced coaches and the way they go about similar situations, and you can't help but sort of... appreciate the way that Tedesco goes about this. Whether this will be enough for Schalke in the long term, I don't know, but I agree with Matt in that sense. I do think that they need to give him at least another year with the new sporting director, with squad planning that he'll have more of a say in, which sounds paradoxical given the situation, but I do think they don't have any better alternative. And one last word. One of the names I've seen was Bruno Labbadia. Yes, he's having a very good season at Wolfsburg, but again, very uninspiring, very, well, Christian Heidel-esque. There is no other way of putting it.
Well, so we've talked about, we've talked about coaches last week as well, but I guess the way to advance this discussion is what would need to happen in order for Domenico Tedesco to lose his job this season? Because it sounds like, Matt, you think that Schalke should have him see out his contract. And Felix, it seems like you should also, you think he should stay with Schalke next season as well. Mm-hmm. But if he continues to lose, does he still deserve to be sacked this season?
I don't think there'll be much of an option if Schalke lose next 2 Bundesliga games. I think that could probably be it.
Yeah, and I also think...
So the next 2 Bundesliga games are against Leipzig and then away at Hannover. So you think those 2 games could be...
Hannover is a must win.
Particularly Hannover.
Yeah.
Absolutely no excuse for not winning there. I could take a team there and win.
I think also another aspect...
As long as there's not snow, by the way.
Yeah, well... As long as I think we also need to talk about another aspect that could cost Tedesco his job. There were reports that the dressing room at Schalke is currently divided over Tedesco and his qualities. And if he loses the dressing room altogether, I think that would be
still
it.
Get the impression that there's more players in there who are in favor.
Yeah,
of
yeah.
Him
the
than,
reports
than
still suggested that players were largely in his favor, but there were also other voices. And if those other voices will get stronger as weeks go by, and if results won't go Schalke's way, if it will come to a situation in which Tedesco loses the dressing room and doesn't bring about the right results, that'll be it for him, I think.
All right, so there are two teams in 2019 that are unbeaten on the season. And it's really interesting because they are in two completely different situations. The first is Eintracht Frankfurt, who, despite playing two rounds of the Europa League knockouts so far, have seemed to continue to at least stay on course to remain in the European spot competition. How is this possible? Because we've talked about how much teams have struggled when in the Europa League. They also lost some. They didn't lose as many players as they did the previous season, but they did lose some key players like Marius Wolf, and Omar Asgaray was pretty important for them. So this it's really impressive, I think, that the fact that they're even with Europa League responsibilities, that they've been able to maintain an unbeaten run in 2019.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Frankfurt this season has been one of the most impressive sides. They've certainly been the most fun side, maybe apart from Borussia Dortmund's first half of the season, when they were absolutely incredible. But Frankfurt play a very exciting type of football. And yes, they managed to handle key players leaving by that setup they have there with Bobic as sporting director, Hübner as their CEO. It works. They bring players for... There's an interesting combination between young players, prospects for the future, and experienced players that didn't really do well elsewhere. I mean, bringing back Sebastian Rode is a typical example of that. They brought a player that hasn't played first-team football regularly for one half years, at least. And he's doing brilliantly well for them. At the same time, players like Ndika and recently the Portuguese striker, Paciencia.
Yeah, Paciencia, yeah. Gonçalo Paciencia, I think is how you say it.
Everyone spoke about him as a prospect for the future, but in the last couple of match days, he's been scoring, what, 3-4 goals, if I'm not mistaken? And things have been going well for them. It's also, we have to be honest, I mean, it's also down to the fact that they've been relatively injury-free.
That's true.
And that's also down to that fact. If it's down to their medical team doing well, I don't know. I don't know enough about that. But at the end of the day, they remain injury-free. They managed the squad in a way that's very, very impressive. And that's mostly down to Adi Hütter's work at Frankfurt. And
yeah, Adi Hütter deserves definitely a lot of credit for coming in his first season and managing two different competitions.
Yeah, and we were talking earlier with John, weren't we, about the idea of is it too early now to be talking about a coach of the year? And if so, who would it be? Then I think obviously Friedhelm Funkel,
Fortuna
Düsseldorf was certainly mentioned, and not without reason. But I think Adi Hütter as well. For me, the success story of this season on various levels, not just how he's taken over that DFB Pokal winning squad, which had lost key players and its coach. And then suffered the setback in the cup in the first round, getting beaten and a bad start to the season. They've recovered from that absolutely brilliantly. That seems like a distant memory now, where we were thinking, oh, here we go, Frankfurt are going to struggle. The way that he's revolutionised Frankfurt's style of play, they're no longer that solid team that Niko Kovac got so much out of. They're now so much more expressive going forward.
That's so true.
Mm-hmm. And we saw that just last night against Dusseldorf, even despite starting with Haller and Jovic both. No, Jovic started, doesn't he? Haller started on the bench, but Kucinovic started on the bench as well. But being able to start those players on the bench and then bring them on to turn around a game in which Dusseldorf were well in that game for at least an hour.
Haller
was outstanding again, and for a man of his size and the actual just length of his legs, but to have the ball control that he does is so impressive. Two really, really good goals. But the way that Frankfurt kept on at Dusseldorf. The way that there was obviously an understanding and a confidence about that team that the goal will come. And when it did come, I think that was absolutely typical of the way they've been playing. They won the ball relatively high up the pitch, but once they won it, they didn't then panic into launching straight into a massive transition. They still played one or two or three relatively short passes on the right-hand side, managed to feed the ball through into that right-hand channel and then get the ball across. Admittedly, the defending at the back post was pretty shoddy from Dusseldorf. It was. But it's a good finish for him. What's in the Portuguese lad?
Yeah, Paciência. Yeah.
Who I haven't really noticed this season at all, to be honest.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, because it's crazy, because there has been so much attention on their trio of Haller, Jovic, and Rebic.
But also Kostic on the two outside flanks of that.
But then all of a sudden you bring in Paciência, who actually has missed a good chunk of the season as well. And he seems to fit exactly what Adi Hütter's doing as well.
Quality all over the pitch. And personally, I've not hoping, but waiting. I've been waiting for the wheels to fall off at Frankfurt throughout this entire Europa League campaign. I'm delighted that they've not. It's an incredible story, but there's things being done right there at Frankfurt, which a lot of other Bundesliga teams could probably take a lesson from, in that... The football isn't the completely rapid, energy-sapping transition football which has tripped up Bundesliga teams such as Gladbach, such as Red Bull in Europe in the past. It does sap energy when you're playing like that twice a week across potentially four knockout rounds of Europa League competition. It's a complete energy drainer. Also, the way Adi Hütter has gone about holding his team together. Niko Kovac had a lot of praise last season for the way he held a very multicultural and multinational squad together. I think he even brought in his own experience as a Berlin-born Croatian to understand that he's a linguist. He managed to help hold that squad together. Adi Hütter's come in and done exactly the same thing. Similar experience from Bern, where he was with young boys. And before that,
in Austria
with Red Bull Salzburg, he cuts such a calm figure. He's a delight to listen to when you're at games and you listen to Adi Hütter speak afterwards.
Oh, he's so calm.
He's just so calm. Yeah. Nothing phases him. The 1-1 draw, I'm thinking about the last game, Frankfurt game, that was a 1-1 draw against Borussia Mönchengladbach, which was on the just a few days after the 2-2 draw in Ukraine. So the Frankfurt were visibly tired. You could tell they were the journey, the match in Ukraine, the weather, then the game against Gladbach. It visibly drained them. But Hütter and his players sat there post match, and were like, "Yeah, we expect this to be a hard one, but we know we have the quality. We adapted our game plan so that we didn't have to run so much today. And it's come off. We just got a point at home against Borussia Mönchengladbach, who are one of the best teams this season. Absolutely calm. It's like absolutely nothing phases Adi Hütter. It's so impressive to watch."
Yeah, and you can see the speaking of Adi Hütter's squad management, tactical management. I mean, you just get the feeling that they, as a team, and he as a coach, they just know when to step it up. Because in the Bundesliga against Gladbach, they were all saying, "We've had a difficult game. We expected that. We knew exactly what to expect."
But yesterday in Dusseldorf was the same thing, too.
Exactly.
It wasn't going perfectly for them for 60 minutes.
Compare that to the Inter game, where it was one of the most intense games of football that I've seen this season.
That was electric on all levels.
The amount of kilometers that Eintracht Frankfurt's players had to do in this game. It's just incredible. I mean, Martin Hinteregger gave an interview afterwards and he said it was the most difficult game of my career when it comes to the intensity of the game. And you could tell, I mean, the amount they had to run and the intensity of the game just took so much out of them.
Speaking of Martin Hinteregger, what an addition that was.
Yeah, absolutely brilliant. I mean, Sebastian Rode brought so much to the team since coming
to that team. Mm-hmm. I mean, he balances that defense perfectly well. They did need another defender to put in there along with Ndika and with and Makoto Hasebe and that group. And he is obviously a left-footed. He fits perfectly on the left side of that defense. And he was great against Inter Milan. He was great again last night. Also helped set up, I believe, one of the goals. And
defensively brilliant last night.
I mean, like you said, Felix, it goes down to, I mean, who is in charge of this team right now? Mm-hmm. And Freddie Bobic has done a terrific job not only finding managers that work with that style, but also finding the right players. And he said recently, too, that there are some players that the German system isn't developing right now, but he's already found substitutions that work for his team. I mean, he says there is no Haller that's coming through the German system right now. So what does he do? He finds someone that works for his team, and maybe they don't have as many German players as them and Freiburg are completely the opposite. Freiburg have played with German players, rely on German players, whereas Frankfurt have basically now relied on non-German players, and it still works for them, and it's really impressive what he has done with that team.
Yeah, I think it's two very different philosophies in Freiburg, and two very different clubs, very different means, very different financial situations. But when it comes to Frankfurt, it also bodes very well with the city, if you think about it, because Frankfurt is such an international place. It's such a place where people from all sorts of countries come to. And it's a city that celebrates its diversity in a way that not many cities in Germany do. And that squad that Eintracht Frankfurt has right now, that very diverse squad from 19 or 20 different nations, if I recall, it just works. And it's just the whole philosophy of the club, the whole transfer philosophy of Freddie Bobic. If we've spoken about Freiburg bringing in players, German players that didn't necessarily do well elsewhere and somehow managed to develop them in a very, essentially... in a tactically interesting way, you still get at Frankfurt a relatively different philosophy of bringing in young players that were maybe playing on the bench, maybe playing reserve sides. Paciencia played in Porto's second team, if I'm not mistaken. Rebic was a reserve player or a bench player at Fiorentina before he moved there.
Jovic is all known from Benfica.
Exactly. Jovic wasn't exactly in Benfica's plans. And they just take them to the next level. And it's so impressive to see, especially given their brand of football. It's just loads of fun.
So the other unbeaten team so far in 2019 is Werder Bremen. Now, they haven't done it. Their unbeaten run is may not seem as impressive because a lot of those results have been draws. But still, Florian Kohfeldt has gotten this table in a solid position in mid-table, which is saying a lot considering that they've flirted with the relegation zone each of the previous four seasons. Matt, what do you make of Werder Bremen's developments this season? Because it did seem like they did have European aspirations at the beginning of the season, even though they wouldn't say it out loud. But still, I mean, where they are is still a really strong position.
Yeah, I think they're down to ninth now, despite that win over Schalke at the weekend. I think the way to judge them in terms of their development is the development they've made from the past couple of seasons' relegation flirtations, then by this season's early little moves up towards Europe and possible dreams at that end of the table. I think they're still lacking from suffering from a slight lack of squad depth. We have seen that in the past, especially defensively, when particularly Velkovic has been out at certain times. That does cause them problems, particularly the second goal from Brilembolo at the weekend. That's a free header in the middle of the 6-yard mm-hmm. box. That's poor, needs sorting out. Too many draws as well. So yeah, they're certainly the aspects which Werder Bremen need to build on. That probably explains why they're ninth and not higher up in around fifth where Frankfurt are, despite remaining unbeaten. But yeah, that's the negatives out of the way. The positives, there's certainly more of them. I think going forward, there's an impressive range of different types of goals that are being scored, mm-hmm. Whether long-range efforts from the likes of Eggestein or Davy Klaassen, whether it's the goal poaching from Claudio Pizarro off the bench or even starting sometimes, which is absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, he started on Friday
as well, didn't he? Rashica has been a revelation as well, especially in this second half of the season. Martin Hanek's finish for the fourth goal off the bench.
And the fact that he came back after a four-game absence and fit right back into that team and scored off the bench.
And that's been key. The leadership qualities of Max Kruse there in the centre. And particularly important. I think the return of Philipp Backfreder there in that sort of number six role, so yeah, protecting that back four, been particularly important with the defensive issues or defensive injury problems that Bremen have had at times this season.
Also important just as a veteran presence. He's been at the Werder Bremen, I think, since he was 20 years old. So
definitely, and there's an important that's key to the identity that goes through Werder Bremen, embodied by no one better than the coach, by Florian Kohfeldt. I know you're a big fan. You wrote a big piece. Weekend.
The point I made about Florian Kohfeldt is the fact that, I mean, when we talk about Werder Bremen have seen a lot of managers since Thomas Schaaf's decade and a half tenure at the club. But since Florian Kohfeldt's come in, he's provided this stability that I think the club has been in dire need of. This club has not been lower than 11th this season. As you said, they've been more likely to flirt with the top four than they are with the bottom three. And that just having someone bring that consistency, that's where you start. And from there, you can think about pushing forward towards Europe or even just developing as a mid-table team.
Yeah, I mean, they've not quite been able to demonstrate the same offensive potency that the likes of Frankfurt,
right,
and Borussia Mönchengladbach and Red Bull have been able to show. But that will come in time. Bremen are a club operating on lower budgets, probably all three of the above. Frankfurt maybe taken out of that. I've not got any figures to hand. But yeah, for the situation which they've come from, which Florian Kohfeldt has re-established themselves in, obviously still got still in the cup and big dreams there. He's seen the effect that a cup run or two cup runs and one cup victory have had on Eintracht Frankfurt the past couple of years. That can
That's a very good point.
Never underestimate the importance of fighting for a trophy and then ultimately even winning a trophy. Never underestimate the importance of that on a squad, particularly a young squad like Werder Bremen and a young coach like Florian Kohfeldt. Generally impressive. I think there was a key interview which I read a couple of weeks ago with Kohfeldt, in which was in El Freunde, he insisted and made quite a big deal out of the fact that he's not mates with the players, despite his age. I thought that was quite interesting. I mean, it might be quite tempting for a manager, a coach who's that young, even younger.
Yeah. So he's 36 years old, and as Claudio Pizarro, who's 4 years older than him.
Exactly, and I think in his personal approach to his players on a private basis, I think there's a lot of similarities there with the way Julian Nagelsmann approaches his job. Extremely professional, extremely forward thinking, very, very progressive, and with a healthy distance to that team, just enough to enable the continuation of that identity at Werder Bremen, but also is just enough distance to be able to take or to make necessary decisions.
I think there is also a line to be drawn between the atmosphere on both clubs, like when it comes to Frankfurt and Bremen. Of course, as Matt just said, very different means, very different financial situation, a very different sporting situation. But at the end of the day, in both clubs, you can, like, in among the fans, there's this sense of optimism. There's this sense, first of all, of stability, which is something that both teams haven't had in a while. And second of all, there's this sense that something is building. And you feel that Bremen fans are very happy with the process that's been taking place at their club, not only at the team, also at the club in general. And Kohfeldt is a big, big part of that. I think before Kohfeldt's appointment, there were questions asked about Frank Baumann and his coach appointing abilities. But now that's history. Nobody talks about that anymore. And rightly so, because Kohfeldt has proven that he has what it takes. And going forward, that sort of combination, cooperation and connection between the club, the team, and its fans is something that both Frankfurt and Werder Bremen have. And that's going to be key for any future development as well. Who knows what's going to happen in the Cup. Werder Bremen are still in it, we said.
Yeah, they play Schalke in the mm-hmm. quarterfinals.
Yeah. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see where that goes. But the general sense among their fans is certainly optimistic. The feeling is good. People love to go to games. You can actually, I've been to two Werder Bremen games recently, and you can actually feel the optimism talking to people there. And that's fun to see. I also think Werder Bremen are one of those sides that you can easily say they're also important to the league. One of those historical sides, title winning sides until like back in 2004 recently, I think. Their development has been very, very encouraging. And looking forward to seeing where it goes.
All right, that'll do it for this week's Tribuna Weekly. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts. And if you do, please leave us a friendly review. You can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page and follow us on Twitter at Tribuna Podcast. Felix Tomzett is at FTomzett, Matt Ford at Matt_4D, and I'm at Davis_VanOptorp. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back soon.